Welcome to Extra Points. Now here's your host, Cousin Sal, and his pal, Dave Damashek.
All right, welcome to Extra Points Podcast, part of the Extra Points Podcast Network. Cousin Sal coming to you with his dear, dear pal, Dave Damashek, on hump day. Not just any hump day, any Wednesday, Sheck. This is a big one. First of all, we're looking for office space. We're looking at office space, I guess. We're not looking for it. It's going to find us, Jack. We're getting together. We're doing that. We're getting nice spaghetti, a sensible lunch, right? If that wasn't enough.
Oh, thank goodness. A salad. Yeah. That's what his heart needs. Yeah, that's what we all need for our friend Eddie Spaghetti. I'm just trying to, like, forgive me. I'm just still trying to wake up after some somnolent hard knocks.
Oh,
my
I know.
Goodness. My goodness,
I want to talk
Sal,
about
that's
that.
Your team.
Ugh. I don't mind it. Honestly, I don't mind. Let the ho-hum episodes go by. I don't want any nonsense coming out of this stuff. We don't need any tells from this, right? I don't want to run trick plays. I don't want to see that my offensive lineman's in love with stuffed animals. I don't care about any of that. Let's just get to the football part of it and check what we're doing it today. Your guy, Alan Faneca, Pittsburgh Steeler great, Hall of Famer. We're going to talk to him today.
Yeah, not he escaped with a respectable looking bust too. So
he did. Well, let's ask him. I guess busts. You know, it's beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? I mean, we have to see. I think I'd be happy with that if I were him, but who knows?
Yeah, I agree. Well, he's one of those guys too who, you know, was a gigantic, outsized superhuman when he retired, and then he vanished for like 4 months, and then he reemerged and was like, where the hell did Alan Faneca go? You know, he lost like 100 pounds. Hopefully he'll be an inspirational tale for Eddie Spaghetti.
Oh, interesting. Maybe,
know what? Yeah, that's right. We should get some tips for Eddie Spaghetti on how he did it. Spaghetti who are outsized, are super.
Yeah, maybe he could become a Hall of Fame inspirational speaker.
That could be. But with Hard Knocks, that's what we learned, connecting the dots here between your team and my team, the Steelers. We heard on Tuesday, Chase Claypool. Oh no, bad Sevens carrying him off the practice field and everything else. That's the kind of stuff you don't want.
Right.
Unfortunately, on Hard Knocks, there was really not much intrigue beyond the state of Zeke Ball's anus, I guess. Like that was like he had to get powdered to fix that up, and that was, like I say, the most captivating portion of
it's so funny. You have Mike McCarthy screaming for physicality in one of the least inspirational speeches you've heard. We need more physicality, and then smash cut to baby powder and CD Lamb's candles and Aziz Vance Saint Laurent, whatever it is. I don't know about Mike McCarthy. I know I'm laughing at him. The players have to be laughing at him too at this point, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. It really, I don't think he's necessarily hurting the Dallas Cowboys 2021 with his, I don't know what those are called, pep talks or talks or whatever, but he certainly ain't helping nothing. We are spending time, our precious seconds here on the Big Blue Marble, being wasted. Either if you're in the Dallas Cowboys meeting rooms or if we're watching the Dallas Cowboys in their meeting rooms via our TVs. Either way, snoozy stuff.
Yeah, I think we should be a little worried that the smartest coach in the room sounds like Ricky Gervais. I'm not sure if that was the intent. Jerry Jones did that to save on salt. Actually, my biggest complaint of the whole thing is that there wasn't enough Jerry Jones. I think we need 15, 20 minutes out of Jerry Jones. We don't just need him fist pumping one of the lineman's kids in Mr. Burns fashion. It was very scary the way he did that. But maybe I was just happy to see he survived the salt incident.
I agree with you. That's to this point. I don't know what that says about two episodes in of this year's Hard Knocks. That the most captivating part was watching Jerry Jones put salt onto his lukewarm breakfast sandwich. I feel like they're leaning a little bit on the very slow-mo practice highlights against other teams or scrimmages or preseason games. Because for whatever reason, correct me if I'm wrong, the Cowboys have not fully flung the doors open for NFL films this year, right? We're not seeing very much of what goes on Watching Ben DiNucci play Micah Parsons in chess ain't exactly the insider's access that we have come to see with past.
But you know, we know how people can be a pain in the ass. So I'm not sure what the behind the scenes, like on paper, the Dallas Cowboys Hard Knocks looks great, right? And Jerry Jones is going to be forthcoming and all that stuff. But in reality, maybe it's Zeke Elliott's like, hey man, you got a half hour with me and that's it. I got nothing. They're like, all right, can we get you a gift? Well, we'll get you a gift to wrap. Okay. It's like, all right, I don't have a gift. All right. We'll get you some luggage and you'll wrap it. You have YouTube on your phone? Yeah. All right. I'll do that. Okay. All right. Then we're going to pretend Dak comes to the door. Like you know how produced it is. And you know, maybe these guys give you 10 or 12 minutes a shot. So I'm not sure how much we blame the producers of Hard Knocks. Yeah. It is a little lame. With the playing chess. I like the practice stuff, I think, the most. I really do.
I guess it's good. I mean, I really do think Washington, as a for instance, would be interesting this year with Ron Rivera pushing everybody getting the vaccine and then some percentage of his players going like, yeah, we know you had very serious cancer, coach, but I'm still not getting it. The push and pull of those conversations or the dynamic there would be much more captivating to watch what goes on there. Or the Bills with Deion Dawkins. Like, yeah, I didn't know if I was going to make it because I had the 19. And then Cole Beasley being like, well, that's too much information for me, man. I don't want to hear from you about that. That's a personal choice.
Right.
That would be a captivating edition of Hard Knocks, more so than what we're seeing so far.
I think so, too. One thing I do want to talk about, and I know don't touch the quarterback is a thing because, you know, we're now down to DiNucci in late August. But, you know, they preview this guy, Kamara. They focus on him, right? Foreigner. He has his family there. It's a nice, great story. He went to Kansas, and this is going to be the first time the Arizona preseason game is going to be the first time his family sees him play in the pros. He's in practice and they're yelling at him. You got to break down perfectly. He's undersized. So he has to do everything just right to get by the offensive lineman. And he does it. And he puts a three fingertips on DiNucci's shoulder. And they're like, what? Oh man, did Kamara just touch the quarterback? Don't touch the quarterback. It's like, you got to go full speed. You're trying to win a slot here. And then you have to stop immediately, right? Otherwise, you're going to yell that. Now this is a negative in the coach's eyes. I just felt bad for something like that. That's a no-win for that guy who's probably going to get cut.
Yeah, it's funny. And, of course, it's Ben DiNucci after all.
Like, yeah, right.
I mean, does that really count as a quarterback you can't touch?
Look at the quarterback. Yeah, don't touch.
That's because they need the physical body, somebody to be throwing the ball at Cowboys practice that day, so you can't have that guy get hurt. But that's the closest you ever hear when you think about it. I mean, obviously, we don't see 24 hours. We don't see the full practice. But you never once hear. It's interesting that, you know, as we move now into the phase of no taunting rules, when there were, you know, when the focus was on, and it just sort of remains on, you can't kind of, you have to fall on the quarterback a certain way when you're tackling, when you sack him, and where your helmet is and everything. You never hear any coach anywhere on the practice fields like, hey, now, remember the new rules. You never hear that mentioned ever. It's weird because I think deep down they know, like, what are we going to do? We can't really modify the way you play football, and we're just going to have to. I think that is the takeaway.
They're happy they have one extra thing to yell about, I think.
Have you ever, listened to Al Riveron or one of those guys talk about it in front of players? I've watched Riveron address these rule changes to current or just retired pro football players, and they're like, well, hey, Al, there's no way around that. No way when I go for a tackle, there's no way I can adjust my head angle, my launch angle. That's unrealistic. And Al Riveron's response was always, now he's retired, but was basically always like, well, better try. That was basically, it's like, yeah, but you understand that when you're moving full speed, there's nothing you can do about that. Like, okay. It's basically, we're at an impasse. Now, this taunting thing, I guess a player could try and restrain, but it is, essential to football, isn't it? I mean, I know we talked about this. Everybody's
yes, we
in
saw
on
the guys
Mara,
playing chess yesterday. When they're playing chess, it makes sense. It's a quiet environment and everything, right? But yeah, I don't see it. And it doesn't make any sense in football. And yeah, they should do like a what would they call those sports science? Remember those sports science episodes where you actually break down the velocity and everything else of a guy running or hurdling or whatever else? Like same kind of thing. Is he able to actually physically stop himself from celebrating or stop himself from touching the quarterback shoulder pad on this particular play? I think a lot of times you'd see that the science indicates that you couldn't. The one thing I was bummed about is I felt like the Rams-Cowboys fight, the highlights I saw for a couple weeks ago, were better than what was shown last night. Like, that's something they should, I don't know. There's a little skirmish, then all of a sudden everyone's shaking hands and trading jerseys after the scrimmage, but it's not how it seems.
I love that they even have to do jersey swap kind of conversation even after a scrimmage. But again, I'm reminded, what is achieved in actual preseason games that can't be accomplished in those scrimmages? We don't need them. Let's stop this nonsense already. I can't take it. Arguing with people online, Sal, people going after me about Justin Fields. I say, Justin Fields, why didn't the Broncos will rue not taking Justin Fields? Why didn't they take Justin Fields when they had a chance? They thought they were going to get Aaron Rodgers. And then people are saying, oh, you're anointing him because he made three good throws in a preseason game. No, I'm not. I don't care about what happens in the preseason. I watched him play college football against Clemson and otherwise. That's why I like Justin Fields. These preseason games are dividing us, Sal. They're dividing us as a football nation.
Well, let's go to FanDuel for a second because they do have who's going to start for three teams. Now three teams are left here to decide who is going to start week one. And you talked about Denver Broncos. Drew Lock. Would you take any of the underdogs in this situation? Drew Lock -160 over Teddy Bridgewater +125 to start week one. Cam Newton -300 over Mac Jones +230. Or Jameis Winston -210 over Taysom Hill +175. And then they have others. They have Trevor Siemian 31-1 and your guy Spaghetti, Ian Book at 50-1. Valiant effort against the preseason, the Maven Ravens there. Anyway, he's at 50-1. Would you take any of those underdogs to start week one? We're looking at, I guess, two more preseason games and no injuries is all these favorites need to survive.
No, I mean, at this point, to answer your question, no, yeah. I'm going to ride with all the favorites there. But you know what we should do, maybe? Eddie Spaghetti, you have a PlayStation 5, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
I think what we should do is, we've tried this in the past, why don't you do it again here, Eddie Spaghetti? And I, for real, why don't you, with the same roster, same personnel, except at quarterback, do Jameis Winston against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Madden, do a game simulation, and then do it with Taysom Hill, see who wins, and then we can send that conclusion to Sean Payton to help.
He could do him. Well, it's not the Buc. Oh, you're just picking the Buccaneers because it's the rival, the division rival.
Oh, well, whoever you want to play. Yeah.
Well, I thought you were going week one, but you could do the whole season with.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, do week one, Spaghetti, and that will provide some insight. We can help out our friends down there at Saints World.
I agree with you. I think all the favorites of those three, Winston, Newton, and Locke. Now, I've maintained all year this could be a big moneymaker for Sean Payton. He puts Taysom Hill in on a gadget play on 1st and 10. And then we never see him again. It's Jameis Winston. Then he collects on the plus money, right? That would be something else. So who's the starter? Who's technically the starter? I guess Taysom Hill. But not only do I like the favorites, I like Drew Lock a lot. I think the Lock is a lock there at -160. Not a great price there, but I don't know. I don't know that they're going to give Teddy Bridgewater the opportunity to grab that from him, A, and B, he had a pretty good opening preseason game, right?
Yeah, but you're just not with Teddy B, his style of ball. You're just not going to be competitive in the AFC West with Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert, you know, and right, and Derek Carr. You're not playing. You're not keeping up with the Joneses within your division if you go Teddy B. Drew Lock has, you know, cuts the figure more of gunslinger and all that, but he's a step down or maybe several steps down from the guys I just named.
I'm trying to think for this specific bet, what needs to happen for Teddy Bridgewater to overtake Drew Lock? I mean, injury, obviously. I don't know that he'll get the reps. I think they're happy with Locke at minus 160.
Yeah, I think so too. And the head coach, you know, I feel like offensive lineman background feels like that you want that, or you feel like you know, defensive minded, conservative kind of guy. You feel like that they might go to Teddy B and to play conservative, but that's just not a winning strategy, like I say, in AFC West 2021. So, yes, it's got to be Drew Lock. Elway has to step in. I know he's not really supposed to be day-to-day weighing in on those things at this point, but he's got to be like, come on, let's go with Lock. It's our only chance here.
I think that's it. I would say that. That's a good bet. That's not my pick of the day for the day, but jump on it now at minus 160. I think after this preseason week, whether they play Thursday or Friday, they could be up to minus 300, the you know, the Cam Newton type numbers. What else? We talk about these quarterbacks. Oh, well, it got a little less crowded in the room, check. Tim Tebow cut, Josh Rosen cut. So, okay, Catholic, Jewish, there's, you know, no discrimination here. They're getting it from all ends here. Josh Rosen gone. Tim Tebow, I don't want to make too much of it because it was not – the only thing I was thinking is maybe he was set up to fail. Maybe we always thought of Urban Meyer as a confidant, but maybe he has something out for Tim Tebow. I was like, this guy can't block. A little trading places thing went on here, Sheck. And they knew Tebow would fail, and they knew there'd be funny highlights that they can giggle at of him spinning out of a block. Is that possible? Either way, he's gone.
I like conspiracy theories, Sal. Mm-hmm. That's what our nation has been, our society at large has been consumed by. So feel free to perpetuate a new one. That's we have room for one. I mean, it's you know, just good for him. You know, his entire life is like a Forrest Gump type reality show. Whatever he kind of like falls into, he gets to do. Very few other people would have the opportunity to be in their 30s after an excursion playing base, another fantasy opportunity. Yeah, I decided I want to play baseball, but you're not good at it, Tim. Yeah, well, never mind. And now he's an offense, a tight end, which is what he should have been. The irony is, coming out of college, that's what he should have been. He should have been an H-back and focused on that in his early 20s, and maybe he would have had a chance of making it. But what an abject waste of time. And I don't care what people want to spin, like Urban Meyer, 4D chess. He brought in Tebow to show the rest of the Jaguars what work's all about, as though the assumption is for Herb or anyone who perpetuates that other football players aren't trying hard. And Tim Tebow is the gold standard of hard work. I mean, it's all absurd. And I'm sorry to the people who were excited about Tim Tebow. And whatever, but I do see a lot of people saying that, like, that was the only reason I was going to watch football was Tim Tebow. There's that section of our population that says that, and it's like it's confusing for me because I thought they didn't like when people kneeled, and so I don't know what to make of it. But now we don't have to worry about
here's,
it.
Here's something you're also not going to know what to make of. I work on FS1, one of the premier. Host on that network came out with this tweet. I don't want to name anyone. You could probably figure it out or look it up. Someday, 40 or 50 years from now, people will wonder how that guy Tebow took over 1-4 Denver in 2011 and took it to the AFC West title, team rushing title, overtime playoff win with 316 yards passing, and now all capital letters, and never got a chance to start another NFL game. Now, I know this is just to spark more nonsense, but some 40 or 50 years from now, I guess we'll have the benefit of replay, right? And we'll be able to help them along. We'll be able to see this guy's throwing motion and how most of his passes bounced into the turf 3 yards short. So I don't think that'll help them, all the wanderers out there, understand why he never got a chance to start again. Come on.
Well, I mean, listen, it's fair because I think, you know what, some 35 plus years beyond the Miami Dolphins going to the Super Bowl on the right arm of David Woodley, we're still asking, why didn't David Woodley get more shots in at pro football? Sure, the Pittsburgh Steelers started him for a few games there in the mid-80s, but otherwise, you know, why did pro football turn its back on? I mean, just pap. Just jive.
Yeah, that's all it is.
We don't have enough stuff to talk. All right. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
We could be done with Tebow. People get mad at me, too. My God. Ugh, enough. Jamal Adams, highest paid safety, 4 years, $72 million.
Wait. One other thing I have to say is, because then this opens the door. because you were on the text chain too. Our pal Jeff Schwartz, after Tebow, after gets cut, what does he do? He uses this as an opportunity to make some straw man argument at my expense, saying, well, see, Shaq thinks, foolishly thinks he could do things on a pro football field, but Tebow just showed what would happen if you ever put Dave out there. No. What that bum Tebow does or doesn't do on a pro football field is no reflection on me. But do you see how it further perpetuates their elite little club? Like, you can't hack it on the gridiron because Tebow couldn't. Damashek ain't the same. Damashek's quite there. Yeah, we both throw with our left paw. Fine. That's about the extent of our the comp between Tebow, the pro football player, and Damashek. I don't like that. That it really. It helps these guys.
Anyway. You hate when people make sense. But I have to say, one thing that I'm taking away from Hard Knocks is, oh, my God, it is damn hard to make a team. It is really hard to make an NFL team. Like, you could be just as good as anybody else, and if they're 5 pounds more and a hundredth of a second faster, you're out. Like, I felt bad for that Kamara guy. Like, oh, how does he make the 53? It's tough.
It is just straight up beyond all that other stuff. And it is the, you know, I guess that's why we hear McCarthy going on and on, like, Yanes, we gotta hit hard today. We gotta hit like those kind of things. I guess those are the just the slight edge that you get, but it all really 98% of the process is like, who's big and fast? Because, like, if you ain't those things, then you don't even have a chance of making the team, to your point. Like, I don't know what special story breaks through that. But it all comes down to, like, yeah, great guy, really good at Division I, AA, and all that. Like, yeah, he's just not fast enough for the NFL, like, to get rid of him. It is striking, is the
– such an uphill climb.
0.1% of the 0.1% from college football making it to the NFL. And yeah, that does kind of break through.
And then, think about, like, the best athlete you know and played football at your school, like, or at your college.
Who was yours? Who did you play? Any college level athlete?
I didn't play with them. There are some that went from my high school to the pros and then got cut by the Bears in the first round or something. I'm trying to think.
But they were the best in six counties, right?
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, the best in six counties. Yeah, what about you? Was there a high school?
Well, we played in basketball. We played a team that had Darrell Porter on it. Who? You say Darrell Porter? He was the sixth man for Pitt way back when. He was a nice college basketball player, didn't play NBA or anything like that. He put 40 on us in the first half, and they're like, yeah, that's enough, Darrell. You've shamed this collection of teenagers enough. I mean, like, borderline, you know, nice college basketball player, certainly not a superstar or anything like that. It's crazy. Earl Campbell in high school? I just love those conversations. What the hell happened when
the whole town has to come out to see this guy, right? It's like, yeah, it's an alien. I write about this in my book. There was, I'll keep it short, but I was such a wise ass and the coaches hated me so much in football that the kickoff team would kick off to me, just me and one blocker. And so I would get destroyed. And that was it. That was their practice. All right, kickoff one, and they'd come out and they'd kick off to me. I'd get one blocker and I'd get just hammered. And it was the first thing we did after stretches. So I'd get like nervous, like seventh period. I'm like, but I couldn't show it. And I get beat up, and then I was just like wrecked for the whole rest of the practice. Fast forward to week one, our game against Amityville, our kickoff team, we kick off to Rob Carpenter, who later plays for Syracuse and the Jets. Had a cup of coffee with the Jets in the NFL, runs it back untouched, 88 yards, whatever our kickoff was short, 88 yards for a touchdown. It's like, good. I was almost rooting for it. I was like, yeah, good. That's what you get for giving me no blockers. Our kickoff team's like, huh? What? They're getting stuck. They're getting thrown on their ears, and that was it. And from then on, I had blockers. So that was a nice story. But Rob Carpenter is probably the best we played against.
The son of Rob Carpenter, too, the old Oiler and otherwise, right?
Was it the son? Isn't that weird? So there's Bobby Carpenter.
Well, it wasn't the son.
No, I don't know. I'm not even sure. You're not getting confused with Bobby Carpenter, the Ohio State and the Giants, Rob Carpenter.
No, wow, Bobby Carpenter, of course, was the was the first American hockey player drafted first overall, I believe, and he went to the Washington Capitals, I think, or maybe he went to the North Stars. I don't know, Sal. Listen, this is what August does to our brain. It turns it into mush. And don't you know that while we flap our gums oh so casually here, that we are a mere 10 days away from college football
you
kicking
count
off.
That week zero, though, is the first week, right? That's week zero?
I mean, you have actual. Yeah. I say this every year. It's my annual.
I like
annual
the full
lament.
Slate where I got four games on at 9 a.m. here on the West Coast.
I hear you on that. Yes,
one
absolutely.
Michigan.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But so I mean, here's let me get out another one of my annual laments. And now it is extended into college football too. it was a pro football issue for me. We don't need divisional games. In week one, we don't need games that have outsized import right out of the gate. You know, like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers should play like the Houston Texans in week one. Now, you don't need these juicy matchups, and you certainly don't need on September 4th. And I say we don't need it, but I can't wait for it. When has there been a better college football game to start the season off than Clemson, Georgia? I mean, these are two highly ranked teams. That's great. What I really, really don't like, though, is that you have Nebraska and Illinois playing each other, and you have like actual Ohio State playing a good Minnesota team to start the season. What do we do? Who decided that we're starting conference play right out of the gate?
We've been out in the desert, Sal. We've been out with
the footballless desert. Just give us a cracker. We don't need filet mignon just yet. We just want to eat.
Yeah,
we
but
just
then you got all the powerhouses playing Prairie View A&M, and that's the one they'll use for week zero. And that's, I don't know, what kind of celebration is that? I'm with you for the most part. Finish up strong in the division, even in the NFL. I don't need to see Cowboys, Giants Sunday night. First of all, it would make me sick the whole game thinking about it, Sunday night game. But, yeah, college is the same way. I like a little mix.
A borderline sharp, college football sharp, whispered in my ear just yesterday, Sal, that, and maybe that's a good little teaser for you, to take a shot at Alabama. Of course, we know they're loaded up in terms of pedigree, but inexperience could undo them against a game Miami team. So too could be the undoing of the Ohio State Buckeyes against the aforementioned Gophers in week one. Inexperience for two highly talented, highly rated teams. Maybe you tease those two underdogs and get a better number on those two.
What do you think of that?
So
Ohio State's 13.5 point favorite over Minnesota. Ohio State's on the road, right? And then Alabama, you're looking at
18.5, if I remember.
Is that what
right?
it was? Yeah. So you get another 24.5. I don't know. I gotta look more closely at those matchups.
I love the college football lines are the best. They make me laugh out loud when I see like
44, 45.
Yeah, we like Auburn to beat whatever Patsy they're going up against by 37.5. I like the hook put in on that.
Never comes down to that number, so don't even worry about it. Never does. Let me get this out. Jamal Adams signs with the Seahawks. You don't have them making the playoffs. 4 years, $72 million. They locked that up. I think it's good having a happy Jamal Adams back there roaming the secondary. Definitely helps. What do you have, like 9.5 sacks last year? I think he missed a handful of games. Missed 4 games.
Classic 21st century defender, right? It would have been fun to see had he tried to do what Jimmy Graham did, whatever that was, a handful of years ago when he was like, tag me as a tight end. I'd rather be a receiver. Right. Same thing if Jamal Adams tried to go with edge rusher as opposed to safety. The difference in dollars if they tagged him would have been vast. I just would have loved to have seen how that would have shaken out. But yeah, good for Jamal Adams. He's a
good for
man.
Jamal Adams. Good for the Seahawks. I still have them with 10 wins. We're going over against all odds. We're going over the NFC North tomorrow, and we did the NFC East. Surprisingly, I took the Cowboys. Just ignore whatever I say about the East. I'm always wrong about it. But let's switch. We have Fanica coming on in a few minutes, but the NBA Christmas schedule was released, and guess what, Chuck? I don't care to even give it 1 minute. This is football time. This is it. NBA, so they finished their summer league. Like, all right, take a breath. go ahead, go do your thing. You're, you know, still 50 days out from opening tip. No, they got to release the schedule. I see it as a slap in the face to football and Hard Knocks and preseason and everything else that they do this.
The Thanksgiving football schedule matters to me. When it comes out, I have to see. That's the first thing I look at. Oh, yeah. Schedule. I don't care who plays the season opening game unless it involves my team. I don't. Oh, the Cowboys have to. Oh, they're Buccaneers and the implications. We know that the home right. team, the defending champ, almost always wins that game. Bet the Bucks. I'm sorry, Sal. But the hockey game on New Year's Day used to intrigue me. Not so much anymore. I think now the Field of Dreams game, they're going to probably do that every year based on the TV rating success that was. The Christmas Day NBA lineup means nothing to me. It is like we're like 5 weeks into the season.
I feel like an old jerk too. I don't care either. I'll go over the games. Knicks home for the Hawks. Okay, obviously that was a nice playoff matchup. Bucks home for the Celtics. I don't know what to think about these Celtics. Every year it's the same kind of thing. Suns, Warriors. I'm not even going to comment on it. Is it Lakers, Nets? Okay, so that's the big one, right? That's the 8:15 Eastern game on Christmas. And then Utah, Dallas is the one after that when you're drunk and can't stay up for any of
it. When there are 82 or 81 or they're 82 or shame the devil, 162 games, right. How can any one of them feel special? The Field of Dreams is the answer to that, or the outdoor hockey game is another answer to that. The date that the game is played is not reason enough for me to watch, except on Thanksgiving, because it's a weird day that the game's being played on a Thursday and you have three games in the middle of the week, and that stands out as special.
Oh,
Christmas Day that there are basketball games on, it's background noise to me. It's on the whole day, but I don't really, who cares?
Right. FanDuel. Have you heard about these guys at FanDuel?
I have, yes.
Check, you could watch these games. Christmas, Thanksgiving, doesn't matter. But if you want to add a little excitement to whatever holiday or non-holiday, your watching experience will be enhanced by betting all the action on FanDuel Sportsbook. There's a reason FanDuel's America's number one sportsbook. Their app is simple to use. They've got great odds on all different betting markets. And yes, when you win, they get your winnings safely in as little as 24 hours. Yes. Right now, FanDuel is letting you place your first bet risk-free up to $1,000. Seems crazy. Thousands, a lot of dollars. Just place a bet on any game and FanDuel will refund you up to a grand back if you don't win your first bet. Why doesn't like Jamal Adams do this? Just take all your $72 million and just keep opening accounts. That's what I would do if I were him. No strings attached. Just place any bet you want. You win, you keep the cash, you lose. You get your entire bet up to $1,000 back in site credit. Yes. Oh, the Northern Trust Open is here. Jordan Spieth becomes the first professional golfer to sign with a sports betting provider, and it's FanDuel. And I like him at 18-1, Sheck. Why not? Let's take Jordan Spieth. Let's welcome him to the family. He won the Valero, second at the Open. He was second in another big tournament. 18-1, Jordan Spieth to win this Northern Trust. They tee off Thursday. If you've never tried FanDuel Sportsbook, what are you waiting for? Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started, and be sure to sign up with promo code Extra Points so they know I sent you. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code Extra Points. Let's go for our picks of the day as we wait here for Alan Faneca. Let's make it real quick, Sheck. I'll tell you what, I've been terrible with these. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm zigzagging, trying to find the Indians over the Twins and games that no one really cares about. Here's something. I'm going with a trend. Brother Bri has been laying on this for 2 weeks. On August 2nd, Sheck, the Orioles beat the Yankees 7-1. Since then, they have lost 13 in a row by two or more runs. And only one game in that stretch where they only won by two. So they've won three or more in 12 of the last 13. And they lost 10-0 yesterday to the Rays, who are just really trying to keep pace with these Yankees. You don't want to be overtaken by the Yankees, who swept the Red Sox yesterday. I'm not even looking at the pitchers, and I'm not even going 1.5, because that's like minus 180 right there. Tampa Bay Rays minus 2.5 runs, Shaq. That's crazy. What is that in football? 18, 19 points in an NFL game? 2.5 runs?
I was going to say 2 touchdowns. Yeah, but that's, okay. That's big.
Right there, minus 2.5 runs. So this is where the streak ends, minus 110. You were a winner earlier in the week. What do you say? What do you say for baseball? Is it? I guess it's baseball.
I gotta say, because we gotta celebrate. We have to offset what Harry's doing to our collective reputation in the sports gambling space here.
Oh my god! He's under 17% for the last 2 months.
That's insane. I don't know if you know Anton Chigurh. You don't have to be flipping a coin to know that if you flip a coin, you're right half the time. This is cataclysmically sad for what Harry's doing here. I am going to say that a meaningful ball game, the Brewers now pulling away in the Central, but the Cardinals still scratching for a wild card. They're coming on a little bit. They just got back pitcher Flaherty after sitting down for the last 2.5 months, a good first outing. But now he's going against Freddy Peralta and the Brew Crew. I like this number here. The Brewers on the road in Busch Stadium, battle of the beers. Between these two beer making towns, the Brewers laying 1.5 on the road. Freddy Peralta has also been strong pretty much throughout the season. The Brew Crew plus 152. That's too good to pass up. Too juicy an odds there. Yeah. So I'm going to take that. Also, I'm intrigued by the total. What do you think about that? It jumps out at me like, well, you got to bet the over 7, right? The total on this is 7. I don't know. I'm going to avoid it. I feel like they're trying to tempt me to do something.
Yeah, that I think make they're sense. Looking at a 4-3 game, which would will not be good for you. So, yeah, the runs are premium in for this pitching matchup. But yeah,
I'm going to take the Brewers who are blowing out the rest of a decent NL Central, but the Cardinals are playing for something. Yeah, okay, lay the 1.5 plus 152 for one of the very best teams and a legit contender to reach the World Series here. I'm going with the Brewers.
There you go. All right, plus 152. Yes, and just for the novices out there, in a game, in a coin flip game, and the Brewers on the natural line are minus 120, when you're giving the 1.5, you're going to get about plus 150. You're going to get a good price. Now, when you have the Rays playing the Orioles, you give 1.5, you're only minus 182. I was going to jump on that, but I didn't feel like I was doing anyone any favors there. Minus 182. That's why I went with minus 2.5, which is a coin flip right there. So Rays minus 2.5. You're going Brew Crew plus 1.5. I promise we'll have football soon enough, right?
Well, here's another one for you, because I agreed with it and I didn't get it out last week when we were going over some NFL player props league leaders in 2021. I like Chase Young. Was it Brother Bry who threw that
Brother
out
Bry
as well?
For most sacks, yeah.
Yeah, 12-1 to lead the league in sacks. I like how it sets up for him to
see again. You're being swayed
be
by the preseason. Nice little
yeah, that's
swim
what it
move
is. That's right.
Got through on the highlight there. Yeah. I don't know if he'll be a sack machine, right? He obviously it's his first year, so he did pretty damn well, but he didn't still comparatively not up there with the big guns yet, but.
Well, I like, you know, Khalil Mack sack totals notwithstanding, because he is often a one-man wrecking crew in pass rush. The thing to look at is, do they have someone formidable on the other side that the offensive line has to concern themselves with? That's what sets up. And so now you're betting, if you like Washington's pass rush in that division, which you should, do you like Chase Young over Montez Sweat becomes the calculation?
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah, that's true. I will say this. It's not, and there's good value. I like that bet, but it's not a fun bet to root for sometimes when your guy's getting triple teamed. It's the most annoying bet. If you're like in week 17, like, all right, oh, wow, Chase Young is tied with Khalil Mack or whoever, one of the Watts. I'm going to take a look here. And then you key on that game and you see your guy getting triple T, you'll start throwing the remote around the room for the next 3 hours. It's very sad. It sucks to root for that, but good value in 12-1. All right, check. This is a big moment. Let's bring him in. Our guest is a 9-time Pro Bowler, a Super Bowl champion, and now a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Dave, get your hands out of your pants and put them together for Hall of Famer Alan Faneca. What's happening, Alan?
Oh, man, what's going on, guys?
Congratulations on a well-deserved Hall of Fame enshrinement. It was a big week. It was you, Troy Polamalu, Bill Cowher, Donnie Schell, Bill Nunn, all Pittsburgh guys. Why didn't they do this at Primanti's? I don't understand why you had to go to Canton. They should have brought it to you, right?
They should have. They should have. You know, I said all week long that it was Pittsburgh West. You know, Pittsburgh just relocated for the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it was our make good as a Pittsburgher myself. I think it was our make good for what Cleveland did when they came into Heinz Field in January. We had to remind everybody who's boss and taunt the people of Ohio and let them know what really matters and the trophies and such that the Pittsburgh Steelers have and the Cleveland Browns don't. As far as Polamalu, great speech by you about the difference in being on the Pittsburgh Steelers versus one of the 31 other pro football teams. Polamalu's speech hit on that even harder. Are you cynical the way some people are that Polamalu was indicting the current Steelers, that they don't have the same love and togetherness that maybe a decade ago your edition of Pittsburgh Steelers had?
I think the game itself is just different. I think the people evolve, the culture evolves. I think things are just different. I didn't really pick up on that as much, if that's what you're saying from his speech. But I think there's definitely a culture that and former players, we have a pride in, we have a pride in what we carried along and what we passed forward, and just the homage and respect to be paid towards that. Right. We all are lucky enough to have stepped into it. But you got to honor it while you're there.
You chose Hines Ward as your presenter, to the delight of Steelers Nation, who all think he deserves to be in Canton. Of all the people you could have selected, why was it important for you to pick Hines? I know you guys were drafted in that same 98 class, right?
Yeah, it's such a huge, huge honor, huge feat, right? Who do you ask, right? In your whole life, who do you ask? So, it's a very daunting probability, a question to figure out. But the more I thought about it, the more I felt like guys I played with and it was just Hines. And, there's a lot of things in life that for any reason, they just feel right. And Hines just felt right. We've always had a tight bond. We've always had a tight bond on the field, off the field. And it was just the right choice, and I loved having him there. And I was just so glad he was able to make it. His wife's gonna have a baby any day now, so it was a little touch and go there for a while.
They have to name it Allen, right? Boy or girl? At this point,
I wouldn't do that to her. They're free to do whatever way they want to go.
Okay.
What do you think of a big talking point this offseason, and in fact, last season, even during the 11-0 run, and then things got sideways and people really started to focus on Juju Smith-Schuster shamefully standing on other teams' logos. People very worked up about this. Now, NFL-wide, no taunting is the big concern for the power makers. What do you think about, is it a problem in 2021 that Juju does what he does? Does that actually motivate opponents? Where do you come down on that issue?
I come down on the issues. If you're not in the nitty gritty, getting grinding it up with the big boys, then you probably don't need to be saying anything. The equivalent. I played with a guy and he would always talk smack to the entire defensive line, and it never really bothered me because I thought it was hilarious. But some guys on the line would start punching them and say, "Man, talk to your guy. Leave my guy alone. don't rile my guy up." That's my thought, man. If you really feel like you are speaking for the team, you need to make sure that you are speaking for the team and there's the right reason to be speaking.
So wait a second. What you're saying is Juju equals the lady at SoFi Stadium who threw the Coke at the guy that started the big fun, the big fight the other day at the preseason game. She didn't actually have to throw any hands. She just lit the fuse by throwing the Coke. That's what Juju's doing.
She lit the fuse. Yeah. a little bit, I guess. That's what I'm saying. I mean, if you're going to talk, you got to be able to back it up. And if you play a position that you can't necessarily back it up all the time, maybe that's a decision you made in the wrong.
Speaking of lighting the fuse, I watched this back a few times now, even yesterday. Can we say that you had the best block in Super Bowl history when you helped spring Willie Parker for the 75-yard touchdown against the Seahawks. You could say it right now. I mean, it's one of the many
reasons. Hey, you can feel free to carry that on. You can say that for eternity. I won't stop you.
Okay. All right. Well, no one cares what I say. I think you should make a point right now and say this is why, you know, it could have been part of the Hall of Fame speech, but I understand why you maybe left it out.
That was just a great setup and a great play. It's going to be a hard one to break, I think, for the longest touchdown ever. So I think it's going to be talked about for a long time, even outside of Steeler Nation. But just really an exciting, love it when a plan comes together, man, because it was a total setup from the beginning and they took the bait and we ran away with the touchdown.
Look who's working in some Papard, old school A-team there from Alan Faneca. Why do you suppose, Faneca, that, and I hope we have time to talk about your choice to wear number 66 in black and gold. You know, I'm a big fan of yours, but I'm curious what pushback you got over the course of your career wearing that around the banks of the Three Rivers with Lemieux. But why in the Bayou, with Ike Taylor and Ryan Clark being two of them, why do you suppose Pittsburgh produces quarterbacks? Why, you're an anomaly coming from that part of the country. Why is the Bayou so good at churning out Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, and otherwise? I'm fascinated by its ability to just wide receiver, DBU. I don't get it. What gives there?
There's something in the water down there, right? So it's just been a factory for, especially of late, right? Of late, it's been incredibly unreal, and see my helmet back here on my left. You know, it's a proud point, man. It's definitely grown, and it keeps growing. And I think that's what keeps bringing guys there. You know, even the guys that are out of state, you know, they're coming there to get on some of that. They want to be a part of that, and that's great.
Let me interrupt here, Sheck. Let me ask you, Dave. Who is the best 66 in Pittsburgh sports history?
Let's Mario right Lemieux. Now. I'm sorry. Listen, I Faneca, big fan, DeCastro. Look, long time Pittsburgh Steelers backer, but of course, I mean, Faneca knows it, right? Faneca, how say you on this?
Oh, man, I got it.
You just got a nice big football bust, but you know, Lemieux is Lemieux.
This is.
I got a great story. So, Mario's starting to talk about coming back, and the city's starting to get the energy is starting to come back, and we're cutting down a back street on the south side. I don't know where Julie and I are going. And somebody did a nice little drawing. It's probably some kid drew like 66, and it's black and gold, right? Black and gold. But, you know, and Julie's like, my wife, she's like, look there. And I'm like, baby, that's not for me. That's got nothing to do with me. Mario's on his way back. That's all about Mario. People are getting pumped up. She thought these people, you know, took the time to make this little artwork and put it in their front window on the street. And I was like, nope, that is not for me at all.
you could have made yourself. People would have been very conflicted on the banks of the Three Rivers because everybody loves you and the Steelers. But if you would have been like, if Mario comes back, that's fine, but he has to wear 65 because I'm 66 now. Yeah, that would have been. You could have made yourself a villain to some in the city there.
Yeah, I might have not lasted 10 years though.
I go with Alan as the best 66, and I apologize, Alan, for Sheck's insubordination there. If you want to hit the leave meeting button right now, I understand. But really, you're the best 66 in Pittsburgh history. There you go.
Well, thank you.
Go ahead, Sheck. I
have a question about the 2021 edition, if we can talk about that very quickly. Somebody who does not pretend to know about offensive line play. You're one of the few people who actually probably can weigh in on this. What do you make of? To me, it's the great unknown. We don't know what these five guys are going to be for the 2021 Steelers, but of course, it's essential to what happens in the AFC North. If they are, middle class even as a collective, I think that with the weapons, there's a chance for the Steelers to be really relevant come January. How say you? What are these guys going to be? Can you predict a bunch of five guys who are mostly young guys who haven't played together?
I don't think you can predict it. I think it's going to be week one, two, three, first month of the season till you'll really get a sense for their identity of who they are as a group. And how the offense is going to use those guys, how hard are they going to lean on the run game? You know, we're gonna get a little pieces and a little taste in the preseason, but it's never true. You know, everything's so vanilla, very bland. You know, we're not seeing anything of what they're practicing behind closed doors at practice. So it's gonna be a while to find out. But you know, I think I've been saying this all summer long. When there's a problem from the previous season, and you're pounding on it the whole offseason, it's gonna get better. How much better is the question? It's going to be better, because there's no way possible with it just being pounded on you all summer long. You're going to be better, but it's just a matter of how much better. So I think the addition of Najee Harris is going to be great, too. So that's going to help those guys out at top up front a lot. So I look for good things, but it's going to be hard to tell until we get them into the season a little bit.
As I say, Sal, I mean, at some point when I watching on TV can tell you where the ball's going to go in the last quarter of the season last year, Roethlisberger was limited, couldn't get off his spot. They couldn't run the ball, so it was pretty easy to predict. Yes, I think brighter days lay ahead for that offense. But do you, Sal, detect in Alan Faneca, the Bayou zone, that maybe 15 some odd years on the banks of the Three Rivers, now you have a Pittsburgh accent, Faneca?
Yeah, there was a little
something. It's going on, dude. It's going on. I don't know what it's going to be. Like Zach Banner and Chooks, they might be good, but I don't know what's going
to
be.
You know, ben I guess we'd have to pull good, up an interview right? from 2005 to compare, but I do hear a little yinzer in
there. You got one of them accents now, Yinz.
Oh, man. You know, I spent a lot of time there, so you never know. You never know. But, you know, Pittsburgh is the second home, so it wouldn't bother me at all.
By the way, Mario Lemieux doesn't even speak English, right? So there's right there. He speaks French Canadian. What is that, a language?
Shame on
I don't
you.
Know. Come on, 66. We have the best 66 right here. Real quick, Alan, you know, we like to make money. We discuss gambling on this show. We love the player props, but there's no player props for offensive linemen. And I feel like there should be now. There's certainly metrics out there for, you know, the least sacks allowed or most pancakes would be fun. Trash talking, like you brought up, there's got to be something we could take to FanDuel, right? Which metric would you like to bet on? For
it's all the long game, though. All that's all long game. I don't know. Everything's about the quick bet now. The quick
yeah.
The quick. I've got some buddies that make bets, and I'm like, what kind of bet are you making? I mean, I'm like, they're making second half bets, third quarter bets. I'm like,
oh yeah,
it's a whole new world out there.
Yeah. It certainly is. It's a whole new world. All right, check. I'll give you another opportunity to apologize to Mr. Faneca here for saying.
Well, I'm a big fan. I'm happy for you that you got a better bust than Polamalu got. Yeah. Polamalu, great, but you know, I don't know that they did a great representation of his bust. But you know, I don't know. Listen, I speak every week to in football season to your pals Randy Bauman and Bill Crawford, and we go on and on about the rivalry against the Ravens and against the Browns. Lay it on Steelers Nation, nay, lay it on the football universe here. It sets up interestingly that it's neither the Ravens or Steelers who are supposed to win the North this year. Nay, it's the Brownies. Are you scared that that the North is about to be ruled by Baker Mayfield and company?
I don't think he gets scared. Steelers to, I'm looking at him. Yeah, he's not a guy gets scared.
I'm curious. Does that set up nicely for the Pittsburgh Steelers to be looking up at the Cleveland Browns in the preseason rankings, according to the so-called experts?
I think it sets up nicely for everybody but the Browns.
That's pressure, right?
Yeah, I don't know, man. You know, there's lots of times, even when I was playing, right, the Bengals were supposed to be the new wave. And, you know, that's good. Everybody's going to be good every once in a while. But, you know, it takes that consistency to be, in my book, considered the favorite. You know, new guys on the scene aren't necessarily the favorites. So it'll be interesting to see. I think they are a better team, but I don't think they're favorites to win the division.
There you go.
One of the big questions of 2021 going into it, have we seen is let's just be frank and honest with one another here, 66. A lot of people, the cynics said, it's over. When you hit your cliff as a quarterback in the NFL, it's a steep drop off. Have we seen that happen to Roethlisberger, or is there something left in the tank?
I don't think we saw it. You know, I don't know that we saw the cliff for him. I think we saw the cliff for the offense and what was going on and a little bit of the perfect storm as far as, you know, a couple pieces that were aging here and there and underperforming in certain positions. And I think, you know, he owned it. And I think that's what leaders do, is that they own the problem. They put it on their shoulders. That's what I always tried to do as well. So I think you'll see good things out of Ben this year, I think. And, you know, he's a leader of that team now. He's a leader and he takes it and he owns it. So, you know, that doesn't surprise me.
Go Tigers. Here we go, Steelers. Have a good season. You're already in the best place of all for a football player, Alan Faneca.
There you go, Alan
Faneca. All of time.
Thanks for coming on. We appreciate
it, guys.
All right.
Hey, this has been fun. Let's do it again.
All right. You got it. Look at that, Alan Faneca.
66. He's one of the great 66s in Pittsburgh sports history. That's nice.
You should have lied and said he was your favorite.
I don't jive people, Sal. I have my integrity. That's all I have. What am I going to lie to Faneca? I love Faneca. He's a Hall of Famer. Lemieux's the greatest hockey player in the history of people, though. I mean, what, you know, come on. I take his silence on the Palomalu bust issue as an agreement that he got the better bust. Yeah.
There you go. All right. One of the top 266s in Pittsburgh history. That was a lot of fun. And it was,
I think the Buccos once had a 66. I'm trying to think who it was. I think Sal Cenceri wore it, a middle linebacker for Pitt football in the Dan Marino era.
Yeah.
Was 66. I didn't even mention him to Faneca. That would have been a slap in the face.
Babyface Solomon, come on, you're a Steelers fan. What did you think?
He's not. He's a Yankees fan.
You appreciate Dave answering honestly there.
Dave, I believe the pirate you're thinking of is Devadas Navraskis, I believe. And I think Dave is right. Any self-respecting yinter's got to go with number 66, Mario Lemieux. And but Faneca.
Sadly, we agree on something. Great. That was good. What was I supposed to do? Have no dignity to Lemieux's Faneca's face?
Never coming on this show. Faneca, we can maybe get once or twice more. That would be the equation that ran through my head. Being posed that question. All right. We'll talk about it more as we're looking for offices today. Babyface, you can't join us, right? Because you have like three jobs or something, right? Or can you?
I cannot. Dave already called the biggest office, though. He already told me, don't even show up. He said, we're not sharing an office.
Okay.
He said he's taking the biggest office and I'm out.
He gets office number 66. It's going to be fun. We're getting together. We're having lunch. We're looking for offices.
Alan Faneca's a yinzer now.
He really is.
He's
on.
He's Roethlisberger. He's a leader, dude. Yeah, and so you hear how he done it. He say, like, it's on me, everybody. I'm the reason we lost to the Browns.
That was fun.
That's what a leader
good times.
Does.
It really was. You have -3 coming up with Kevin Hench. That's tomorrow, right? Where are we? Wednesday already?
Yeah, we're on Wednesday. We'll talk to Hench. We talked earlier in the week to Matt Money Smith, the voice of the Los Angeles Chargers. He is obviously paid by the Chargers, so take it with a grain of salt. But he's all in on Damashek's prediction. AFC West champions, the Chargers. And he sings songs about Derwin James on down. He thinks he's the best player, if healthy, in all of pro football.
Wow.
That's a strong statement. And Money ain't one to get hyperbolic. So
really
that was a good conversation.
Really good. All right. We have Against All Odds coming up tomorrow. Freddie Roach is on. We had Gable Stevenson. The guys went crazy. You a gold medalist, Shaq, went nuts. Kirk Herbstreit.
He grabbed him around the waist. He did it. Like, what? What happened? I didn't see what happened. Oh, he got him? He did? No. He put his arms around the guy?
It's not about explaining the rules to you. Of college,
we already fixed water polo. I can fix wrestling now.
It's true.
So let's get on that.
They were great. Was that this week already?
That was this week. So that was right.
I'm losing track, but they were terrific.
We had two gold medalists from the H2 throw competition at the Olympics. Yeah.
He grabbed him. He did it. He put his hand around the guy. He got him gold medal. Come on. Stop it already. Enough.
We're going to preview
college Monday.
All.
College football Monday. Yes, Kirk Herbstreit is on. And Spaghetti's going to take his thyroid medicine. And we're going to get back to normal here. Against All Odds, like I said, NFC North. And we have Freddie Roach on also tomorrow. And just a reminder to everyone out there, you may feel like underdogs, but please remember, you're all my favorites. We'll be right back.